Veterinary advice on Talk About with Danny the Vet. Brought to you by Pet Mania, Manor West Retail Park, Tralee.
Now, we don't have Danny this month, but we have a very able replacement in the form of Claire Quinlan from Tralee, who is a certified dog behaviour consultant and a professional dog trainer. And she's here to answer any questions you might have to do with your dog and your dog's behaviour. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you very much, Deirdre. It's lovely to be back.
Good to have you back. Now, you were telling me before, you're one of only four people in the whole country with this qualification. Is that right?
Yes, there's four of us in the country who are certified with the International Association of Animal Behaviour Consultants. So, unfortunately, dog training and dog behaviour in Ireland isn't a regulated industry. So we do have to go outside, really, of Ireland to look for bodies that can regulate us and that can certify us to do what we do. So it's interesting. We're not there yet, but we're getting there.
You're getting there. And I'd say you love what you do.
I absolutely adore what I do, 100%.
Yeah. Is it a bit like, now, sorry about this daft analogy, but is it a bit like your super nanny for dogs, that, you know, there's a bold dog in the house who's stepping out of line and chewing the furniture and peeing everywhere, and in comes Claire and introduces some tough love, and then by the time you're finished, the dog is impeccably behaved?
No. Definitely
no.
Not.
Okay. No. Okay.
But I suppose a version of that. It is really, I suppose, about looking at the behaviour that the dog is exhibiting. And usually under behaviour is an emotion. And under that emotion is a need, usually. And we're looking, I suppose, at dog behaviour in very similar lines that we are looking at children's behaviour, because a lot of research, I suppose, would put certain developmental stages of children, very young children to be fair, up to about 2.5, and dogs kind of on par, actually. So there's a lot of new research, I suppose, opening up that side of things. So instead of kind of going in, I suppose, and coming out with this impeccable dog, it's really about just helping, I suppose, people to understand where some of these behaviours are coming from, helping the dog to cope better in some of, I suppose, the stresses that our human-centric world put on a different species that isn't necessarily fully, I suppose, fully prepared to be involved in these stresses, and working with both ends of the lead, really, to work towards having a much more harmonious life.
Okay, well, that all sounds ideal. Claire, before we get down to questions, you want to talk to us a little bit about certain breeds. Now, you've seen this trend coming, and it probably goes back to COVID. Mm. Certain breeds of dogs, usually crossbreeds of dogs, that that people have got as pets, and they don't actually realise what the dog's innate behaviour is going to be like.
Absolutely.
I'm explaining this very badly, but you might elaborate on that, what you mean.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I suppose we're talking about there is actually a variation within breed that I think probably quite a few people don't know actually exists. We kind of think all Labradors are made the same, all Retrievers are made the same. But actually there are some very diverse genetic kind of lines within, even within a breed itself. So we have to remember that when dogs first started kind of hanging out in pretty close proximity with humans, they did so because it served us to have them with us for tasks, really. So we developed various different types of dogs rather than breeds to actually help us fulfill certain tasks, such as herding, such as hunting, such as tracking. Pest control was a big one as well, which we don't really like to think about, but dogs evolved that way with us for a very, very long period of time, well over 10,000 years. And it's only really in the last 200 years since the Victorian era that we've actually gotten this concept of breeds. Now, when that happened, we started to look more down the line of kind of a show dog. So they were bred a little bit more for appearance than this old function. So we now have more than 350 different dog breeds in the world. And I suppose what that has developed for us is an idea of a working line dog and a show line pet dog, really. So within the working line dogs, we still have a lot of those around, the gun dogs, the sheep dogs, those dogs that were designed for a certain task. And when we were breeding them, and when we are breeding them, some of the traits that we specifically selected for to make them good at that job don't necessarily suit a relaxed family pet home these days. So we would have selected for things like impulsivity, for independent thinking, because we need a gun dog to be able to go off and make their own decisions, figure out where the bird is maybe and flush it out. We need a border collie to be able to assess the movement, the tiniest little movements of a herd of these huge animals that are much bigger than them, and be able to literally move them with their eyes and their own movement. So trainability, quick movement, quick impulses, a lot of different behaviours, I guess, that when we think about the relaxed family home and we want the dog to potter on the lead beside us, they don't really mix. No.
Yeah. So what kind of breeds, and I know, you know, I know people could be saying, well, I have a collie and mm-hmm. it's a great pet or whatever.
Absolutely.
What kind of breeds are you talking about that mightn't lend themselves to being to the restrictive environment of a family home?
So it's actually within the breed. So within a breed, within a lot of breeds, there will be a working line and a show line. So there's a show line border collie that, again, has probably maybe never seen a sheep itself in its life, but they have a beautiful coat. They're much more amenable to handling because obviously there's a lot more grooming, there's a lot more kind of people interaction involved. So within each breed, there is actually two different, slightly genetically diverse lines. And I suppose we must remember in Ireland that if we are acquiring a dog maybe from a farm background, that we're very likely to be looking at a working line dog that has been bred with even a different dog or another working line, which brings some of those genetic traits potentially into the dog that we bring into our home, making them much more active, a much more need for mental stimulation, a lot more independent thinking. So in some ways mightn't be as easy to train for some of the stationary tasks that we would like them to be doing at home. So again, I suppose a lot of dogs then, when we started to come into the show lines, would be bred specifically for companionship. One of the big ones of those would be your Bichon Frise, which literally has been a companion animal since it travelled with sailors, would you believe, on ships, literally around. So spending all its time in close proximity to people, which makes them very kind of good companion animals. So since day dot, since they became a breed in themselves, they actually have spent all their times with humans.
Okay, and so Bichon Frise would be a good family dog or whatever.
They can be. They absolutely can be. Now, where they can struggle is actually, funnily enough, with separation anxiety, because they want to be with us all the time, because that's what we've specifically bred them for. So that is probably the most common issue that I would come up against with Bichon Frises when I'm called into homes to help with certain behaviour.
They want to be with
their
own.
They struggle a little bit when they're left by themselves.
Would the same be true of Shih Tzus by any chance?
Absolutely. So again, another companion. So they really have been a companion dog since they were developed into their own breed.
You know, the way we hear all these stories all the time, Claire, in the news about people who get dogs and then they give them up, and then the shelters in Dublin are overrun with dogs. In a lot of those cases, could it be that the family or whomever, the old elderly person or whomever, they just got a breed that wasn't suited to domestic life?
Absolutely. And even their own specific environment. We'll say, if we look at a border collie, now I live with a working line border collie at home and I adore every second I spend with him, because luckily his traits and his behaviour suits my life beautifully. Quite active, spend a lot of time outside, and obviously have a huge interest in training. But when you look at a border collie maybe that's come from a farming background, they're very sensitive to change. We call it sudden environmental contrast. So anything new appearing in the environment. Because obviously when they are conditioned and trained and genetically suited to modify the movement of a whole group of sheep, they have to be so aware of any little shift, any little change in the environment, so that they can manage this big group of animals. So they don't do very well with a constantly changing environment. So we'll say, you know, if you have a lot of children at home and there's their friends are coming into a party. So we've gone from a quiet environment again to a really busy environment. They can really struggle with those changes in their environment. Other things they're very, very sensitive to is movement. So you can see border collies sometimes struggling in cars because there's so many things zipping past them as they drive away. So again, sometimes a very simple answer to that can actually be using some of the dullers for the windows, just so that there isn't so many stimuli flying past them. They have a bit of an obsession of control of movement. So some people might have noticed this. If you throw a ball for a border collie, they want to stop the movement. They want to stop the ball, not necessarily bring it back to you. They love chasing it to stop it and control that movement. So it's really, really interesting. And I think when you start to understand some of these things about your dog, some people are like, God, he's stupid. He just won't bring me back the ball. But actually, he's fulfilling his innate genetic drive to go and stop that movement rather than actually bringing it back. A retriever will retrieve things for you all day.
Yeah, the hint is in the name, isn't it? Retriever.
And that's how we actually, when dogs developed initially, we named them for their groups, for their tasks. So you have retrievers, because they retrieve. Water dogs, because they'll do a lot of retrieving out of the water. Sheepdogs, all of those kind of things. Guard dogs, gun dogs. So we named them that way.
No, what about boxers then?
Yeah, they do. They spend a lot of time using their arms.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, look, so what breed of dog would you think would most suit a modern family home?
I actually did a project on this for a course that I'm doing at the moment. And even though I've never had one, I probably would have to go down the line of a Bichon Frise, so a companion animal. Again, our homes completely vary. But when you were looking at the busy modern day kind of life where we do expect our dogs to be social with other people, with changes in the environment, with changes to their routine, with handling, with grooming, because those dogs have been bred as a companion for day dot, from day dot, they are just much more genetically primed to be amenable to this. Now, obviously, we have individual variation as well. Dogs go through different things, which change their personality as well in lots of ways. But in general, you're setting yourself up for success. If you're looking for a companion dog, you don't want to be hopping off the couch and hiking every, you know, a couple of times a week. You're just looking for a companion. Definitely those more companion dogs, like the Shih Tzu you were saying yourself, but the Bichon Frise, because they have that really close interaction with people and have had for their entire existence, really.
Yeah,
whereas
exactly.
For me, I wouldn't be able to take them on the hike that I'd want to go on. So for me, for my lifestyle, those companion dogs wouldn't suit as much because they wouldn't be able for the terrain that I love adventuring
around
with my guys.
You're very outdoorsy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So look at your lifestyle, look at your environment.
Absolutely.
And make a very kind of an educated assessment before you consider a breed.
And asking the breeders, is there a working line? You know, if you're looking for a dog that is more adaptive to change, that wouldn't have that level of impulsivity, that's actually very suited to the working tasks, then yes, absolutely. Asking them, is there a working line in this dog? And if you've fallen madly head over heels in love and you're bringing them home anyway, then there are so many resources out there that can actually help you understand the potential behaviours that might be seen in your dog and understand where they're coming from. So you're not seeing them as a bad dog, you're not seeing them as a destructive dog, you're just actually becoming aware of the need that may need to be met in order to live harmoniously with them.
Very good. Well, listen, we've got some questions for you that have come in already. And just to remind people, Claire, who's in for Danny the Vet this month, is a dog behaviour consultant and a professional dog trainer. So if you've got questions for her about your dog, send them in to us now. You can phone them through on 066 712 3666. We'll hold on to Claire for another while to answer your questions, and we'll be back after this break.
Veterinary advice on Talk About with Danny the Vet. Brought to you by Pet Mania, Manor West Retail Park, Tralee.
Now, Claire Quinlan is with us. Claire is a dog behaviour expert. A caller's been on to say they have a border collie almost four. The family got the puppy the August before COVID. The dog has always been very nervous of noise and sudden movement and gets jealous if anyone pays attention to the mother of the family. In fact, the dog even nipped the 8-year-old in the family once because she was getting more attention from the mother. The dog has also bitten two adults in the family, but not seriously, and goes berserk if the dog comes across other dogs, so for that reason is on a lead all the time. However, our listener goes on to say the dog is very loving and affectionate most of the time. Is there anything that can be done, or is it too late to train and socialise him?
Okay, that's a great question, actually, and it is something that we come across a lot, so you are definitely not on your own. I would be wondering, is there a little bit of a working line in that border collie, just listening to some of the behaviours that that particular dog is exhibiting and some of the things that they are struggling with. What I spoke about, that sudden environmental contrast. So it sounds like that dog isn't doing very well with sudden changes in the environment. Sudden noises come from anywhere, and they really can instill quite a bit of anxiety in the dog. Also, we know that from working line border collies, as you can imagine, one particular handler dealing with the dog a lot of the time, so they do tend to bond quite closely to one particular member of the family, and that would be again kind of within their behaviour profile that you'd very often see with a border collie. Now, the good news is it's absolutely not too late, because again, we have to remember that even though a dog bite is a very, very scary thing and a horrendous thing to have to go through with your loved dog in the home, that when we see a dog that is not using the full power of their jaws, so they use their mouths like we use our hands, and every single dog on the face of this planet will bite, given the right set of circumstances for them. Now, this dog has gotten to the place where they've felt threatened enough that they need to use their mouths to warn the person to move away for whatever reason. I'd need to know a lot more about that. But what we do know is that the force that he used his jaws with, the intent behind it, was much, much less. There wasn't an intent on doing harm. When you see a low-level, non-serious bite, depending again, once we get a little bit more information on that, it is a warning bite rather than... Dogs know very well if they're intending to do harm or whether they want the trigger, the scary thing, for whatever reason, to go away. And if they've tried everything else, all this more subtle body language that they will try first, sometimes if we don't see it as owners, and sometimes we don't, they resort to using a stronger a method of communication, which can be your growl, your snarl, your bite. So there are lots and lots of ways that she can work with that, helping the dog to feel more comfortable when other people approach, using a desensitization program. So I'd start to work with the owner and start to assess the point at which the dog starts to exhibit more tense body language when people start to approach. We then use counter conditioning, which is pairing the approach of that person at a level that the collie can tolerate with something inherently positive. And that's a process that you work through step by step, but it can absolutely help. Also, a big part of that would be helping the owner to understand their specific dog's body language, and also pulling back from some of the triggers that the dog is exposed to, because we must remember that when a dog is reacting, there is a huge emotional, there's a lot of emotion going on, for whether it be fear, frustration, anger, it can be sometimes, but we have to remember that it is a huge emotional response for the dog, and when they're on a lead, they're attached to us, so they can't actually make any of their own decisions. So sometimes as owners, when we're starting to work on the full behaviour of a dog, we need to pull them back from this constant kind of triggering of that deep emotional response to allow the dog just to kind of settle for a little while.
Okay, I'm going to move on because
absolutely,
time is ticking.
I know.
A caller has a 15-month-old Labrador that grabs everything in sight, anything he can get into his mouth, and is humping everyone. Okay. What can she do?
Okay, so when we look at the Labradors and the Retrievers, they would be your gun dog. So what we've bred them for over a very, very long period of time, they would be the kind of the working line mostly, is to be able to hold the bird or whatever they're retrieving in their mouth and hold it so gently that they don't damage it. Now, that's going against everything that a dog would normally do, the full predatory sequence, which would be to go off and eat it, or at least play with it a little bit. So in order to do that, we had to breed in a really high value into them of holding things in their mouths. And very often you see with the gun dogs something that we call oral fixation. They are dying to have something in their mouth and they want to parade around with it. So you will see a lot of Labradors, a lot of Retrievers grabbing onto something and holding it, or trying to grab something because it's a behavior that they almost need to do. So again, you can redirect that onto more appropriate outlets. So very often when they don't have anything that feels good in their mouth that they can pick up appropriately, they'll go for all our stuff because, you know, teddies feel great in their mouth. So again, we'd look at replacing, at providing the dog access to appropriate items to hold in their mouth, first of all, and making sure that they are around for the dog to direct onto. We'd make sure that that's of high value to them. So initially using quite a bit of reinforcement around that. Now with the humping, with a 15-month-old lab, that could be something that we'd call a sexual behaviour. But humping is also one of the huge signs that we see for dogs that are, again, exhibiting a high level of emotion, whether that's a little bit of anxiety because some of their needs that they, I suppose, that are within them aren't being met on a daily basis. So we know it ourselves, when we're not getting what we need, we tend to feel more anxious, a little bit more irritable. So that can be what we call a stress behaviour as well. It can be a sexual behaviour, but very often, if you're also getting that grabbing, maybe that chewing, I wonder, is that dog doing a little bit of destructive stuff at home as well? It's very often a kind of what we'd call an overstimulation. So we'd need to look at all of that and make sure the needs are being met on a daily basis.
Mary wants to know, how can she stop her 10-year-old dog from barking when her phone rings or when she talks on the phone?
Okay, it's an interesting one. Again, that can be that noise coming into the environment can be a sudden environmental contrast, and it can initially kind of shock them a little bit. So sometimes the first time they hear it going off, they'll let out a bark, and we tell them to shush or quiet, or we let out a little roar ourselves because obviously we want to speak on the phone. From a dog's perspective, that's us barking along with them and marking that noise as something, you know, that does have an impact or some kind of meaning to the dog. So that can develop more and more over time. The more they bark, the more we shout at them, the more we all bark together. So how you would work on that is bringing it right back down to the stage where the dog is not reacting. So that might just be at a time that you're not picking up the phone, touching your phone, dropping a little tree from the ground when we don't get that reaction. Then we might be putting our hand in the phone for 3 or 4 seconds, taking the hand away. Again, we're looking for a point that we can start to work at where we're not getting that reaction, and you have to pull it right back to basics. Then we might start to pick up the phone after a couple of repetitions of this, again marking the quiet behaviour with the treat. So what we're looking for dogs to do generally in a lot of the work that I do is finding out where their threshold is, where they don't feel they need to react, starting to work at that level and gradually building back up to the point where you're picking up the phone again.
Okay, gotcha. Working sheepdog keeps rolling herself in sheep's poo and fox's poo. How can I stop her doing this?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
But you can't.
Well, they absolutely adore it, and it'll usually happen when we've groomed them.
Yeah,
because they really don't like the smell. Like, I can imagine that the smell of that lovely smell that we love, the perfumey smell, smells a little bit like, to us, if we were to go rolling in poo, we'd hate the smell of it. So it's something a little bit similar to that. It's very normal, again, for a lot of different reasons for dogs to roll in poo. There's a hunting element to it, to disguise their scent a little bit as well from other animals. There can be a lot of different reasons for that, but they absolutely adore it. So I suppose, first of all, if you can stick it,
yeah,
great. But you can also get jackets. This is most likely because they adore it, and you kind of don't want to take that behaviour away sometimes because you just see the joy, the true unbridled joy that comes when they roll.
Rolling in crap.
Yeah, rolling in crap. So there are just relatively inexpensive, just little rain jackets, basically, that we don't need the hood or anything that's going to bother their ears or their head, but you can just literally pop that on, and then you pop that into the washer, give it a little hose down afterwards.
Just one more question, because we've got a mountain of them for you, so we'll have to bring you back again, Claire, but a couple of questions coming in about man trailing. Is that a good activity? What is man trailing?
First of all, I don't train men. I've been asked that a couple of times.
But just dogs.
Just dogs. So it's man trailing. So basically what this is the pet dog version of search and rescue. So we're basically training our dogs and putting our dogs on the specific scent they pick up from a scent article that the person has been wearing the day before, and they have now gone to hide. So we're basically pairing the scent article with the trail of scent that leads to that person, and gradually building up the complexity of the trails the dogs are following. So they literally are finding a specific person that's hiding somewhere, and we're gradually building up towards that. So I suppose scent is a dog's primary sense, by far superior to any of their other senses. It's how they take in the most information through the world, from the world. So again, with your working lines, it is a fabulous, fabulous outlet for them, because it uses a huge proportion of mental energy, because not only are they having to decipher that particular scent, this is a bit disgusting, but we lose about 50 million skin cells in a minute and they're basically picking up on those as they fall to the ground and following that. So they have to pick up the gradients in scent to figure out which direction we went. They have to figure out when it's getting stronger. When they lose a trail, they have to work their way back. So it's a fantastic, fantastic activity, and gives people, also dogs, the more pulley they are in the lead and the less trained they are, the better they are at this sport.
At this, okay.
And we do it in Tralee. So LK Super Snouts on Facebook and Instagram. We run classes nearly every week or every couple of weeks at the very least. So myself and LK Dog Training have combined together. And it's an absolutely fabulous outlet for your dog. Any reactivity or anything like that doesn't matter. Come on away.
Very good. That sounds like fun. Claire, we got to let you go, unfortunately. And I'm so sorry. I just want to apologise to all the listeners. We got mountains of questions about dog behaviour, so we're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately, but we'll have to bring you back again. People can find you on Facebook and Instagram, Claire.
Yeah, so I'm Snouting About Kerry.
Snout and About Kerry, absolutely.
So pop me a message there, anywhere there at all. Claire@snoutandabout.ie is
Brilliant.
My email. So absolutely, and thank you so much for having me. And
not
sorry, I'm such a waffler, but there's no quick answer to any of these questions.
No,
I apologise.
There isn't, no, and it's better to give a comprehensive answer to a few questions. Claire, thanks a million for stepping in for Danny this month, and Danny will return as normal in the month of June.